This is tape number one, side number one of the booklet, How to Have a Happy Marriage. This booklet is not to be sold. It is a free educational service in the public interest published by the Worldwide Church of God. Page one, text by Ronald D. Kelly, copyright 1987. Page five, text by John R. Schrader, copyright 1982. Page 10, text by Bernie Schnippert, copyright 1983. Page 16, text by Donald D. Schroeder, copyright 1981. Page 24, text by Dexter H. Faulkner, copyright 1986. Page 30, text by Ronald D. Kelly, copyright 1987. Page 36, text by Ronald D. Kelly, copyright 1981. Text page 45, by Ronald D. Kelly, copyright 1982. Page 50, text by Earl H. Williams, copyright 1987, Worldwide Church of God. All rights reserved. Contents. Chapter 1, A Happy Marriage in an Unhappy World. Chapter 2, When the Kissing Begins to Stop. Chapter 3, What God Says About Your Sex Life. Chapter 4, When Marriages Go Sour, Attitudes That Sweeten. Chapter 5, A Balanced Family Budget. Chapter 6, So You've Decided to Have Children. Chapter 7, The Average Everyday Housewife, No Higher Calling. Chapter 8, The Proverbs 31 Husband. Chapter 9, What to Do When Your Mate Will Not.
Chapter 1, A Happy Marriage in an Unhappy World. A happy family, does it exist? Or are happy families a relic from the past, something you have only read about in books or seen in the movies? In a world of unhappiness, is it really possible to have a good marriage? Stop and think about it. Count the happy families you personally know. If you're typical, you really don't know very many truly happy families. Tragic statistics on divorce have been tabulated, but there is no way to count the number of those who simply tough out unhappy marriages, who for reasons of religion, money, or children stay together but long for a happier life. Whether you have a near-model marriage or one that needs a little work, here are three positive suggestions on how to put some happiness in your marriage and defy the statistics of marriages gone sour in an unhappy world. Your lover, your best friend. One of the saddest things to me as a marriage counselor is the many couples who are married yet strangers to each other in their own homes. They seem to share little in common. Each goes his or her own way, pausing only for occasional conversations, and those are often arguments about money, child rearing, or sex. You wonder how they ever got together in the first place. But back in high school or college, they thought they fell in love. There was physical attraction, a whirlwind romance, excitement, marriage. But after the honeymoon, when faced with the real life of work, a home, and planning for children, a man and wife are sometimes worlds apart. So first of all, if you are not yet married, before you make that commitment, be sure you marry a person with whom you can share your thoughts and feelings. You should marry a person who will be your very best friend. If you are already married, and you can candidly admit that your mate is not your closest friend, you need to start building that friendship right now. Friends share their most intimate thoughts and feelings. A friend is someone you turn to in time of need. And what better person is there for such intimacy than your mate? Of course, we all need close friends to give help to or to receive help from. Usually, those close friends of the same sex will be a relative, a friend from our school days, someone we work with, or a neighbor. But still, once you are married, there should be no person you are closer to than your husband or wife. Sharing spiritual goals. Perhaps more than any other reason that marriages are unhappy is the lack of understanding that marriage was designed and created by the eternal God. From the creation of this present order of nature, laws instituted for the marital relationship have been in effect. Adherence to them ensures happiness. Ignored, God's broken laws take their toll. When the Apostle Peter wrote about marriage, he said husbands and wives are heirs together of the grace of life. Why? that your prayers may not be hindered. 1 Peter 3:7. He showed that even our personal relationship with God is affected by our marital relationships. Our prayers can be hindered when we don't follow God's laws and instructions about marriage. The spiritual depth of marriage was further demonstrated by Paul when he wrote, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church." Ephesians 5, verses 31 and 32. So very few seem to realize that human marriages should be a living type of the great spiritual relationship of Christ to his church. Marriage, then, goes beyond the physical. The most important ingredients in a happy marriage are spiritual in nature. For example, the one word that best describes God is found in 1 John 4:8. For God is love. Sounds so simple, but there is no greater word than love, and in that one word, love, is the real key to happy marriage. What is lacking in the unhappy marriages all over the world is love. Yet the word love is most associated with marriage. Couples tell each other, "I love you." Most men and women probably really feel they do love their mates. But many do not understand. Love is interpreted as a feeling or emotion toward a member of the opposite sex. It often is how many teenagers think they feel in the early years of dating. Love, they think, is the feeling of excitement for that special person. Funny thing is, most young people experience that feeling of love 3 or 4 or even more times in their teens and early 20s. After each experience, they admit they did not really love the other person. It was just puppy love or infatuation. Unfortunately, far too many have not grasped that the love they think they have for their mates is the same insubstantial infatuation. Real love has to include complete and total concern for the other person without regard to one's own feelings. It is not alone that excited feeling of physical attraction. When a couple ties together the romantic attraction, the deep feeling of care for the other person, and the sharing together of their time, emotion, feelings, and concern, they are building the foundation for a truly happy marriage. So, can you have a happy marriage in an unhappy world? Yes, you certainly can. And if you haven't been as happy as you want to be, start now to build the spiritual value of love into your marriage. In prayer, ask God to give you and your mate that kind of love reflected by God Himself. Then do those things together that will build happiness into your life. Make your mate not only your lover, but your best friend. You will then defy the statistics and be among those who have found the way to a truly happy marriage. Chapter 2, When the Kissing Begins to Stop. Thousands of articles have been written to try to steer people away from the pitfalls of divorce. But too many married couples with serious problems wind up calling it quits anyway. They didn't start out that way. Take a look at the average wedding picture. Husband and wife are beaming, their faces wreathed in big window smiles. They literally radiate happiness. This is forever. What happened in just a few short months or years? The smiles are no longer there. Frustration and disappointment have set in. Trust has been replaced by suspicion. Each may suspect the other of infidelity. One partner may be planning divorce. The other may be considering desertion. It didn't just happen for no reason. It is axiomatic that there is a cause for every effect. Marital miseries have a definite set of causes. But let's try to discover the one basic root cause. What caused the bust-up? A couple divorces. They join the statistics. Their children are plunged into a vortex of insecurity, left to face a harsh and cruel world in a one-parent family. Both the man and woman face major readjustments in their lives. What caused it all? Was it sex? Or that Jack couldn't manage money or even hold a job for long? Was it a meddling mother-in-law? Or Joan insisting on a job outside the home? Maybe they just didn't get on well together. No sane person would deny that any one or all of these things, and many more, are part of the fly in the ointment. But the one root cause goes a lot deeper than any of these things. Men and women saddled with bad marriages have one point in common. They have ignored some very good advice. That advice comes in just five little words. Love your neighbor as yourself. But who is your neighbor? Isn't he or she the person next door? Co-workers on the job? Church brethren? Club members? Yes, all of these people, and in a broader sense, all of humanity, are our neighbors. But too often we forget the identity of our number one neighbor. You've heard the old cliché, charity begins at home. Clichés are clichés simply because they're usually true. Our number one neighbor is our spouse, husband or wife. The average Joe or Jane usually behaves in a courteous and civil manner toward friends and neighbors. If we are not awfully careful, our spouse can be the only exception to the accepted rules of behavior. A business client telephones a city executive on the job. The secretary buzzes his office and informs him that an important client is on the phone. No matter how rough he feels at the moment, he takes a deep breath, forces a smile, and says, "Hello, how are you?" in a most pleasant voice, showing both interest and concern. Another call comes through a few minutes later. "It's your wife," the secretary announces. "Oh, her again," he mutters under his breath. "Okay, I'll take it this time," comes the reluctant answer. His wife does get through, but is unceremoniously greeted with, "What is it this time?" This man forgot the identity of his number one neighbor. He behaves in a very courteous manner toward his clients and the big boss. He may even treat his employees with deference and decorum, but his wife, that's another matter altogether. The probable long-term result of such prolonged behavior toward his spouse? Cancel another marriage. Such men don't even realize what they're doing. These husbands are not aware that they have been taking their wives for granted for a long time. That familiarity has already bred contempt. Bad marital habits can easily become ingrained, but human beings are capable of cultivating good habits as well as bad. Husbands can learn always to address their mates with obvious warmth and affection. They do it with workmates all the time. If they don't learn how to converse with their spouses in a more civil manner, they are courting disaster. It's as simple as that. If you don't talk to your mate with interest and concern, your marriage is either in serious trouble or soon will be. Lack of loving, thoughtful communication is one of those telltale signs of a failing marriage. The woman's responsibility. Up to now, we have focused on the husband's responsibility in marriage. But generally speaking, today's woman has a full and equal share of the blame when things go wrong in a marriage. Historian W.E.H. Leckie once observed that marriage gives either party an extraordinary power of injuring each other. Women have no idea how much pain they can inflict upon a man. A snide remark that cuts through a man's natural masculine pride can injure him down to the core of his being. Many a man delights in the role of protecting and supporting his woman. Because of the way societies in this world are structured, a man's income might not immediately cover all of the luxuries his mate may want. He may realize the problem and be working on a way to increase the family income. A wife who impatiently nags and complains about lack of income is injuring her mate more than she realizes. Golden rule in marriage. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Surely no one in his right mind disagrees with the ancient sentiment. But who are the others? Probably your mate is the last person you think of in this connection. Things go wrong at the office. You have cost the company a small sum by missing an obvious error in a major printing of company brochures. Your workmate who normally cross-checks your work was called out of town on an emergency. To say that your boss is unhappy is the proverbial understatement. How do you expect to be treated when you arrive home? With consideration, empathy, even sympathy? Of course. Maybe your wife won't mention that the lawn is long overdue for a mowing. That is the way men expect to be treated by their wives. But is that the way they treat their wives when things go wrong at home? That day the bread didn't rise. The bathroom was flooded. She dropped a piece of the best china and the kids have been impossible. And your lovely wife coped with all these minor disasters without calling you once. When you arrive at the front door, she's at the end of her tether. How do you treat her in these circumstances? Do you step in and get the children in bed yourself? Do you offer to dry the dishes that particular evening? Do you console your spouse? Do you treat her the way you expect to be treated? Do you love your neighbor, your wife, as yourself? And do you women respect your husbands as much as you do your own selves? 70 times 7. Peter asked Jesus Christ how many times he had to forgive his brother and threw out the number 7. 70 times 7 came the unhesitating answer. In other words, unlimited forgiveness. There's only one relationship where the 70 times 7 is likely to occur, literally. It is doubtful a brother or neighbor or friend will sin against any of us that many times, but a spouse is likely to. We spend a tremendous amount of time with our mates. The average wife is likely to hear, "I'm awfully sorry, dear," at least several times a week, and vice versa. The question is, do you mean it, and does she mean it? If so, you should forgive your mate without a moment's hesitation. Unspoken grudges can ruin a marriage. Learn how to forgive your mate. A marriage is likely to collect a lot of skeletons. Don't dig one out every time you have an argument with your spouse. That isn't real forgiveness. The proverb says, "An ungodly man or woman digs up evil." Let the matter rest. When the kissing begins to stop, it has been suggested, and with much accuracy, that intimacy is the essence of marriage. Intimacy, however, is so much more than just physical intercourse. A knowing glance between two people in love, a squeeze of the hand just at the right moment, taking a walk in the park together with nary a word spoken, tea and toast for two after the children have been put to bed. All these things and many more make up the intimate marital relationship. Have the cares of this life crowded these things out of your marriage? You don't take the trouble to kiss anymore? You don't bother to sneak up behind your husband and kiss him like you used to do? The children seem to take up all of your time and there's nothing left over for your husband? You nearly always have a headache at bedtime? Then your marriage is in trouble. If you don't express any intimacy toward your mate during the day, don't expect things to work out at bedtime. They won't. What happens during the day is probably more important than what happens at night. Physical intimacies should just be a loving climax to the little intimacies that began from the moment you woke up and kissed your mate good morning. Chapter 3. What God says about your sex life. The commandment against adultery is short and to the point. God says merely, "You shall not commit adultery." Exodus 20:14. But this commandment goes far beyond the mere surface or limited technical meaning of the word adultery, meaning sex with someone other than a person's own husband or wife. Christ clearly expands the meaning in Matthew 5, verses 27 and 28. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Here, Christ expands the commandment to include not merely the act of physical adultery, but sexual lust. Thus we see that the commandment, which at first glance may seem like a mere legal prohibition against one type of improper sexual activity, includes under its umbrella, both in principle and by application from other texts, a prohibition against misuse of sex in every form. But the real point of God's commandment against adultery even goes further than this. The point of the commandment is not limited to protecting one's physical body or biological reproductive machinery, though the modern curse of sexual diseases would certainly be eliminated if everyone obeyed this law. No, the law's purpose is to protect our minds, our thoughts, and our attitudes. Satan, the author of adultery. God is the author of sex. He is the one who made the human body, and he is the one who designed that sex should be a pleasure bond between a legally married husband and wife in the privacy of their own bedroom. But it is Satan the devil and his wrong attitudes that injected the attitude of adultery into the human society. We are not told specifically how Satan did this, what words he may have used, or his method of implanting wrong attitudes. But we do read that Adam and Eve's pure motives about sex were definitely tainted by their eating of the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. Genesis 3, verses 6 and 7. Adam and Eve covered themselves out of a newly found sexual shame which resulted from Satan's influence on them. It is from Satan that man gets his human nature, his evil heart, and it is from this evil heart that man gets his propensity for sexual sin, Matthew 15:19. Pornography by degree. Perhaps most of us would not be fooled by obvious pornography. Not as obvious as open, notorious pornography is what we might call pornography by degree. That is, those forms of influence that Satan uses more commonly to cause the minds of men and women to stray from the pure, giving relationship of sex and marriage into lust. One example of this is the modern style of dress. Today, women and men alike have been brainwashed to misuse clothing purposely to try to entice each other's looks by constantly dressing in a very physical, seductive, sensual way. People do this, no doubt, in order to satisfy their vanity, to enjoy the luxury of having others find them exciting or sensual. But while it's true that God made men and women so that they are naturally sexually appealing to each other, He did not intend that they parade themselves in such a way as to intentionally excite virtual bedroom lust from every stranger who passes them on the street. The sexy, slinky, seductive look is not the look that a Christian man or woman should strive to reach, not outside the privacy of his or her own married bedroom, that is. For an example of proof, examine 1 Timothy 2:9, which admonishes women in particular to adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation. Dress should always be appropriate for the occasion and should exemplify discretion, balance, and moderation, whether it be swimwear, evening wear, casual dress, or whatever. Intentional seducing of the eye clearly transgresses God's command that we flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body, 1 Corinthians 6:18. A man or woman who blatantly displays the charms intended by God as reserved for a marriage partner can hardly be said to be fleeing sexual immorality. Take heed, you who dress and act in this manner are breaking the spirit of the seventh commandment. God will not hold you guiltless. Numerous other techniques of Satan fall under the category of pornography by degree. These include the use of blatant sex in advertising and the inevitable sex themes and scenes in entertainment. All of these things, in one way or another, help to mold the attitudes of people, of your attitude, and hence the thoughts and finally actions of all of us. The bombardment is torrential. Pornography by deceit. Still another of Satan's methods of deceiving the world about sex might be called pornography by deceit. Included in this category are areas that on the surface may not appear to be sex-related at all, but in reality are laced with illicit, lustful actions and attitudes. One good illustration of this category is music. Some songs, whether rock, country, pop, or easy listening, may be pleasant ballads or humorous anecdotes. But, more and more, the basic underlying message of these songs is sex, sex, sex. Anywhere, at any time, with anybody. And remember, this music is on your home stereo or your car radio and in the restaurants in which you eat. Your children do their homework by it and unconsciously imbibe the message of sexual promiscuity that these songs proclaim. This music affects your society, your family, your children, and you. Your attitudes, thoughts, moods, and sexual point of view and outlook are manipulated by this type of thing. Another type of pornography by deceit is the example set by the people around us, including sometimes, sad to say, our friends and relatives, who simply traffic in all types of illicit sexual practices. As we see them literally romping from wife to lover and back, or as we view major sports figures, political people, or entertainment personalities hopping from partner to partner, always with impunity and an implication that what they are doing is fun, our values become affected. We, if we are not careful, can become deceived by the outward, temporary pleasure of promiscuity and decide that such actions aren't that bad after all. But such actions are that bad. The devastation of families left in the wake of such activities is causing disgrace and heartache for which our society is paying the price in terms of true happiness. And God does not wink or laugh at such antics. How shall I pardon you for this? Your children have forsaken me and sworn by those that are not gods. When I had fed them to the full, then they committed adultery and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses. They were like well-fed, lusty stallions. Every one neighed after his neighbor's wife. Jeremiah 5, verses 7 and 8. Protect yourself. How can you protect yourself in a war in which the enemy, Satan, has literally monopolized all the weaponry, the media, and other forces? Is there a reasonable defense to such an overall barrage of high-powered sexual bombardment? Yes, there is, and the first step in your defense is this. Recognize the evil that promiscuity inflicts upon society and can inflict upon you. Contemplate the subtle methods Satan has used to push his perilous perversions upon all peoples. Develop a revulsion for allowing your mind to be manipulated by Satan. God is making sons in His own image, literally putting human beings into His own family as God beings themselves. One major quality you will need to qualify for this supreme blessing is that of loyalty, fidelity, to God the Father and Jesus Christ, who is our Redeemer and spiritual brother. Once you see how Satan has been trying to rob you of the potential of being in God's family by destroying the parallel human family, partly through sexual sin, you will be prepared for the determination you need to follow the next step in your defense. Second, guard the door of your mind. Sex sin, like all sins, begins in the mind, James 1, verses 14 and 15. The place to stop sin is at the point where we are tempted. All sin, and especially sexual sin, gains a lure if we harbor it. It begins to snowball and gain strength until we allow ourselves to sin in our mind or even in our actions. So do not permit yourself the luxury of even a little lust, for a little lust is the match that lights the fire of sexual promiscuity, which burns the bonds of matrimony into ashes. God forgives. God plainly states that our sex sins are grievous in His sight. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, that is, by extramarital sex. For God will judge the immoral and adulterous. Hebrews 13:4, Revised Standard Version. Fidelity and sexual purity are clearly what God requires. But it is true, unfortunately, that in the lives of many who read this, Satan will have already struck. The good news is that we can be forgiven of our past sins, even our sex sins, if we repent, stop sinning, and start doing what is right. Remember the story of the woman caught in adultery? When Jesus had raised Himself up and saw no one but the woman, He said to her, "Woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said to her, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." John 8, verses 10 and 11. Go and sin no more. Good advice, and the advice that all of us must take if we are to learn the lesson of fidelity, which can carry us from the warm bonds of a physical marriage into the spiritual family of God. Chapter 4, When Marriages Go Sour, Attitudes That Sweeten. Is your marriage as happy as you want it to be? Here are vital ways to improve and heal damaged relationships between mates. God established immutable spiritual laws that, if obeyed, will produce happiness and love in marriage as in all human relationships. Break these dynamic living laws, and we guarantee marital unhappiness and misery. The husband-wife relationship. God created humans male and female, and for an incredible transcendent potential, little realized. He created woman to be a helper and companion to man, Genesis 2:18. Few realize today the Almighty Creator ordained that man shall rule over his wife and properly lead her, but emphatically not as an overbearing master, unjustly and cruelly ruling a slave. It is vital to understand two important facets of the husband-wife relationship. One, a husband, as captain of a two-person team, must call the signals. But on the other hand, there must be teamwork. Where opinions, ideas, and preferences differ, they must be wisely, lovingly discussed on the basis of equality. For a husband and wife are, indeed, heirs together of the grace and kingdom of God. 1 Peter 3:7. Damaged marital relations cannot be restored if marriage partners forget the structure of government God ordained in marriage. Society is trying to play a game with 50-50 marriages. It doesn't solve problems, it compounds them. The husband, who should be the leader in a marriage, and the wife must not act in ways that antagonize each other. The husband should take the lead in resolving differences and encouraging cooperation. Isn't it time you learned or recaptured the loving and healing marital values and attitudes? What are the wonderful attitudes that lead mates to build each other up instead of tearing each other down? How should mates approach each other to heal the wounds of misunderstandings and past mistakes? How should mates communicate feelings and needs to each other so both partners can start to tackle their problems and difficulties in a constructive way? There is a way. Now is the time to try anew to improve or possibly to save your marriage by expressing these healing attitudes. What are they? Express appreciation. Damaged marital relationships need a positive first step in the right direction. Somebody has to step forth first and break harmful patterns of communication. Before you married, you saw qualities that you appreciated in your mate. Undoubtedly, you expressed your admiration and appreciation of these qualities many times and in many ways to the one you loved. But in marriage, so many make the big mistake of failing to continue to express appreciation for the small things, or even the big things, provided by their mates. Even good marriages can slowly sour and die because husbands and wives take each other's labors and efforts for granted. What good qualities do you appreciate in your mate now? To this, you should not immediately reply, "But he or she has all these bad qualities and habits that bother me." Right now, focus your mind on your mate's good qualities. List them in your mind. Write them down to impress your mind if you have to. It's important to recognize good qualities in a mate or in your marriage, even if those qualities seem to be only a few now. Are you thankful for those qualities? Have you recently told your mate you appreciate them in him or her? If you're a wife, maybe your husband is not as considerate or affectionate as you would like, but he's a good provider of physical necessities. Have you told him you appreciate his efforts and energy to provide for the family? If you're a husband, maybe you feel your wife is not handling her part of the budget as thriftily as she could. These are difficult and inflationary times for all. Have you told her you appreciate her efforts to do the best she knows how under the circumstances? Have you encouraged her, not harangued her about handling her expenditures? Have you commended her for her care of the children, perhaps, or her housekeeping, or possibly the added income she provides? There isn't a human being alive who doesn't want to receive appreciation. God created that a living law. Break that law by constant focus on negative things or problems about a person, and everything in life begins to appear totally negative. Lack of expressing appreciation for good things causes one to lose touch with the reality of any good in another. Many mates destroy their marriage out of ingratitude. Marriage counselors see this problem all the time. The Scriptures teach us the need to be constantly expressing appreciation, giving thanks always for all things, Ephesians 5:20. You want to be appreciated? Then express genuine appreciation to your mate, or to any other person for that matter. If you are consistent at expressing appreciation where it is due, and it is due even for small things others do for us, there will be a remarkable response. Maybe expressing appreciation won't solve all your marital problems, but it is a positive first step to improve and heal wounded marital relations and communications. Jesus taught us the critical overall principle in all right living. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the purpose of the law and the prophets. Matthew 7:12. Give honor and respect. It may seem difficult at times of heated differences of views or opinions, but again, every human wants to be shown honor and respect. Differences of opinion are not an excuse to drop respect. What happens when husbands and wives fail to show respect and honor to each other, or to any other person? An automatic wall of suspicion is created. Others are more easily hurt, more touchy, when we must point out their mistakes. They are less receptive to even constructive correction. Many disrespected, unappreciated persons start imagining wrongs and insults when none are intended or exist. God commands us in all of our human relationships, honor all men, 1 Peter 2:17. Yes, even if a person does not always express right character. Why? Because respect breeds respect. Disrespect inflames bad feelings. It makes a good situation bad and a bad situation worse. Remember, your mate is a person who willingly gave up many personal options and freedoms to marry you. Have you shown honor and respect to your mate for taking on the challenge of marriage and family responsibilities, or living with all your imperfections? Treat your mate with dignity, and chances are, he or she will want to rise to a higher level of respect for you. Be forgiving. The attitude, "I'll never forgive you for that," is the surest way for wounds and hurts in marriage never to heal. An unmerciful, unforgiving attitude leads to discouragement and depression. It inflames tension and strife. It hardens discord and hate. How many mates have the habit of dredging up past mistakes, in private or public, to embarrass or put down a mate? That's being unmerciful and unforgiving. It reopens old wounds. You, of course, want mercy and forgiveness for your shortcomings. You don't want them repeated again and again. Then be willing to show the wonderful attitude of mercy and forgiveness to another. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father in heaven also is merciful, instructs Scripture, Luke 6:36. You and your mate are imperfect human beings in an imperfect world. So when you're wrong, why not simply say, "I'm sorry"? You'll soon be hearing it in return. Many mates realize, after much suffering, that they have had immature ideas of what real love is, of what marriage should be. Why not admit shortcomings? Take up the challenge of growing in right love and maturity together. If an abusive mate asks for forgiveness, be willing to give it. If we fail to apply the living law of mercy and forgiveness when it should be applied, we guarantee that past mistakes and shortcomings will destroy a marriage. One who shows no mercy or forgiveness will not have his mistakes and sins forgiven either, Matthew 18:35. Of course, persistence in physical abuse must stop if a marital relationship is to survive. Outside counseling may be required. Be helpful and constructive. One of the United States' leading divorce and family law attorneys was asked, "What is the single biggest reason couples split up?" He said, "Number one is the inability to talk honestly with each other, bare their souls, and treat each other as their best friend." You want your feelings, needs, and opinions to be heard and considered? So does your mate. Many mates develop the habit of putting down their mate's feelings, opinions, and desires. But how do you stop this vicious, degrading, and damaging cycle? Quietly sit down together. Make outgoing love your aim. Love is kind, reveals 1 Corinthians 13:4, RSV. The J.B. Phillips translation makes it even clearer. Love looks for a way of being constructive. Be constructive. Work on a positive solution to a problem instead of destroying or putting down your mate when a problem arises. Talk. Listen to your mate. Love does not insist on its own way, 1 Corinthians 13:5, RSV. Be swift to hear, slow to speak, commands Scripture, James 1:19. How often do mates cause enormous marital problems because they disobey this command? A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger, admonishes Proverbs 15:1. Next time, before being so quick to lash back or respond to a mate, stop. Ask yourself, is what I'm going to say helpful and constructive to solving the problem? Or am I really trying to get back and put him or her down? When a mate tries to be positive and constructive about the situation, it encourages the other mate to do the same. But whatever steps you take, don't forget to strive to apply the attitudes that help and heal in marriage. We're a team. A healthy, loving husband-wife relationship is not a master-slave relationship. It is not a mother-son or father-daughter relationship. It is a sharing, complementing relationship where each mate recognizes the God-ordained role of the other and contributes talents and energies for the good of the marriage. It is a union in which each mate expresses appreciation of the other's contribution. Lasting marital happiness requires team effort. One of the newer tragic trends is the growing concept or pressure to go your own way, or as some express it, do your own thing or find yourself, even if it means forsaking a mate, children, or family responsibilities. It's when two mates realize they need help and complement each other that they draw close and grow to respect and love each other. The Chinese have a saying that describes it, one hand washes the other. What a wonderful healing attitude to have in marriage. My love, we're a team, to share the joys of life together, to conquer the difficulties and challenges of life together. It is ignorance to drop burning matches into gasoline cans to see if they will burn or explode. Similarly, breaking God's marital laws will burn you. Break God's laws and they break you. Millions are paying painful mental, emotional, and physical penalties for rejecting or ignoring God's revealed laws on sex and marriage. True love is the way of giving, sharing, helping, uplifting, being constructive, being encouraging. It is the opposite of the way of taking, of adultery, of selfishness, of hurting others, and being unmerciful. Those are Satan's ways and attitudes. They produce evil and suffering in human lives and marriages. So let us not forget, God commanded a man to properly rule over his wife, Genesis 3:16. Women these days are increasingly ruling over weak and ineffectual men, which is contrary to God's law, Isaiah 3:12. God will punish both men and women for forsaking their proper roles, verses 16 through 18. God's word teaches that a husband is the head of his wife, 1 Corinthians 11:3. That man was not created for the woman, but the woman for man, verses 7 and 9. God commands men to love their wives, and wives to respect their husbands, Ephesians 5:33. Note how simply but beautifully the Bible expresses the truly loving, healing attitudes that are to be expressed between husbands and wives. Husbands, dwell with them, wives, according to knowledge of what God reveals about a woman's needs, giving honor unto the wife as being heirs together of the grace of eternal life, that your prayers be not hindered. Finally, having compassion one of another. Be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing. 1 Peter 3, 7-9. Be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. As the church is subject to Christ, so let wives also be subject in everything to their husbands. Husbands, love your wives, as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Ephesians 5, verses 21, 22, 25, and 28, RSV. Why is it so important for mates to live this way? He who loves his wife loves himself, verse 28. Men who misuse their wives or wives who rail against their husbands damage and destroy themselves and their own happiness. By contrast, God's way to marital peace is to let each one of you love his wife as himself and let the wife see that she respects her husband, Ephesians 5:33, RSV. Isn't it time you admitted any wrong attitudes toward your mate? Isn't it time you sought God's forgiveness and help to express right attitudes and actions in your marriage? Obey God's living laws of marital happiness and healing. Express appreciation to your mate. Give honor and respect. Be merciful and forgiving. Be helpful and constructive. Live as a team, with each respecting the other's God-given role. Obey God's instructions on marriage. Many troubled marriages need the assistance of a qualified spiritual counselor. Don't neglect to seek such help if necessary. You can improve and or save your marriage.
This completes tape number one, side number one of the booklet, How to Have a Happy Marriage. Please continue on side two.